Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Welcome back to Circles of Change, and well, what a pleasure that was to have that segment with Renee Krieger from a really fun Renee's Organic Oven. I can't tell you enough about how much I've enjoyed the times that my family and I have gone there. We're going to welcome up here shortly. We're going to get him on the line, Kevin Sheridan. Kevin is a Senior Vice President of HR Optimization and former Chief Engagement Officer of HR Solutions. It's a human capital management consulting firm specializing in employee surveys. Kevin's a graduate of Harvard Business School and founder of three successful employee survey firms, and he pioneered the idea of dual ownership of employee engagement. He was the first in his field, in fact, to address the imbalance that an entire industry overlooked, and he's based out of Chicago. Kevin has consulted for some of the world's largest corporations. He's a frequent speaker at conventions, and his research has appeared in a myriad of national and international publications. Earlier this year, in fact, Kevin joined us to discuss, given how so much work is being done virtually these days, how the relationship landscape for mobile employees and effective leadership styles for their supervisors are changing. So our topic today is Kevin's book on organizational culture, building a magnetic culture, how to attract and retain top talent to create an engaged and productive workforce. So with that, we're going to bring him back on. Kevin's on the line here. Welcome to the show, Kevin. How are you again today, Kevin?
Doing great. Terrific. And yourself?
Oh, we couldn't be better. It's a pleasure to have you on a second time. And I should say congratulations on hitting not just one or two or three or four or five, but six bestseller lists, including the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and USA Today with your book, Building a Magnetic Culture. How's
Thank
that feel?
Thank you so much.
Boy, you know, when...
That was very, very humbling, actually. One of the bestseller lists I looked at, and I was like, oh, I'm above Tim Tebow and Steve Jobs. And it was brief, but it was really exciting.
I bet. Well, when those, you never know. I mean, you've published many books and articles. So did you have any idea that this was going to be the one that would hit the button, I'll say?
I did, actually. This is really the culmination of about 30 years of work on my part. I've been listening to how employees feel around the world about their job and their workplace and the varying aspects of the workplace, and this was the culmination of putting it all together and bringing some novel best practices to building what we call a magnetic culture, but what is really employee engagement.
The word magnetic, so this is this idea that things will stick, there's this polar field, there's this energy. Is that how you came to pick on that particular metaphor?
Yeah, we like magnetic because employee engagement, if you build a workplace that has that special magnetism, it makes it really easy to draw top talent in, where outsiders say, you know, I'd love to work there. That just looks like they're having lots of fun and good people doing important work. And also, the magnet keeps people. It acts as the glue, if you will. If people start thinking of leaving, that magnet draws them back, and they don't forget that they're at a special place and shouldn't begin looking for work elsewhere.
But let's be real clear. We want that magnet to be still some element of choice, though. It's not a ball and a chain that is compulsory, that you have no other option but to stay. I think some of the trappings of organizations of the past really did seduce people to stay into places that they might not have been a good fit for.
Oh, indeed. And the irony of, your analogy of the ball and chain, mm-hmm. is the workplace is very dynamic, and it has to be a lot more flexible than it was in the past. And smart leaders and smart supervisors are allowing much more freedom to succeed in one's job, and people really appreciate that.
Well, in particular, that's probably the number one reason in surveys of why people are attracted, is that they can become more of who they are, not have to conform one way or another.
Oh, that's exactly right. People want to bring the what I call the two P's of engagement, which are pride and passionate. They want to be passionate about what they do, and they also want a job that is serving a meaningful purpose.
So the term employee engagement, though, you know, it's I kind of have to chuckle because it's a term I used years ago, but yet now it's all the popular rage, in which case I think can have a tendency then to be misused. And in particular, this idea that it's something that is done to employees, that this is what you do to get engagement as opposed to perhaps how you are, both, I think you would say, both as the employer and the employee, right? This is a co-owned situation.
That's one of the key messages and the most innovative part of the book, Building a Magnetic Culture. And chapter two is dedicated to this very topic. And historically, I think the model for engagement, or what used to be called job satisfaction, or, you know, how's your job attitude, was somewhat paternalistic. And the company felt that they had to set an environment. They were responsible to give all the things that could fulfill Maslow's hierarchy of needs and bring job satisfaction. And chapter two really is a breakout innovative concept, which is common sense, really, when you think of it. And that is letting employees become owners of their own engagement level.
Mm-hmm.
So historically, what would happen was that we'd as employers do surveys of our employees, whether they were employee satisfaction surveys or employee engagement surveys, and we'd ask, how are you feeling about certain things? And then we'd build action plans. And unfortunately, there was a very important constituent left out of that lopsided model, where the onus was always on the manager or the employer, and the employee was left out of the equation. And as one of my clients said, that's the ultimate oxymoron. Employee engagement, without the employee, it doesn't make sense. And actually, what's really, really fascinating is employees want to own their own engagement level. When we give them an opportunity to get a peek at how engaged they are by completing an assessment, they order it. They're willing owners of their own engagement.
Well, I have to tell a story here, an aside. I can recall back in my automotive days, this is my husband was a different part of the company, and they had just gone through a really difficult series of challenges in this particular part of the workforce that he was in. And this group of maybe 55 people really busted their buns to make things happen. And what happened was, as the thank you, they all got mailed a candy bar. And it was so outside of anybody's fathom, like, what were they thinking, that was the way to say thank you was to mail them a candy bar? And I tell you, that group of 55 went in a very quick amount of time to one of the most disenfranchised groups, such that they ended up, you know, spinning off, moving their careers in another direction. And it was because there was not a sense and an understanding at all of what would trigger these folks, or that, like you said, you know, a simple question, you guys did such a great job, we'd really like to thank you for it. We don't have a lot of money, by the way. And it could have been that they didn't even want anything that was monetarily based, but just a, hey, how about a meeting with, you know, the president that benefited from everything we've done, just to say thank you and a handshake. But the fact it was, no, they're going to mail them candy bars. Oh, my.
Well, unfortunately, stories like that are all too common. I actually worked with a company that I will not mention their name, but the founder of the company, it's a very large multinational company, had in the greeting hallway a life-size statue of himself.
Sure.
And instead of candy bars, literally, he had miniature-sized statues of himself to give to employees. And people are like, what are you thinking? So recognition is actually, if you look at what we call a key driver analysis of what are the key drivers of employee engagement, and you look at the top three, the number one most impactful way to get employees engaged in their job is what you just talked about. It's recognition. And oftentimes, it's just a simple thank you that is never said.
Right. Or just the time of, you know, someone walking down the hall, just cruise by and say, you know, I really appreciated what you did. Or could you tell me a little bit more about that? Just showing an interest, and it mirrors that back, doesn't it?
That's so true. And just having the sense of caring, and I talk about this in the book, that I really think we need to put the human back into human capital management. Mm-hmm. I mean, even that phrase, human capital management, almost infers that we're moving little chess pieces on a chessboard and expecting higher productivity, when in reality, people are people, and many of your listeners who are managers, show that you care. Get personal with the people that report to you and ask them, you know, how's your life outside of work? What do you like doing? Where are your kids going to school? And be genuine. Don't be fake. Be genuine. And employees respond just like magnets to that wonderful, positive caringness.
Yeah, and if it's not, you know, in your bandwidth to necessarily ask the personal related questions, but just even work content related. So, you know, how was it that you did that project so well? Or I understood your team really, you know, decompressed that problem faster than anybody else. Was there some trick to this, that there's a skill we should teach others? I mean, just that kind of engagement with people drives it forward.
Even just nudging them towards dialogues like that, because those conversations are just not happening. One of the most astounding statistics that's in the book is we polled thousands of managers, and you hear, you know, all the major trade journals, the topic of employee engagement, and it's really bandied about. And so we think, okay, it must be really, really hot. Yet when you ask managers, these thousands of managers, when you do your performance reviews with the people that report to you, do you have a dialogue like that? Do you ask people, hey, when you're most fired up at work and excited to be here on the job, what got you there? And how can I feed you more of that? Or conversely, is there anything that's detracting from your engagement level? Or did you find anything get in the way of successfully completing that project? And let me help get those barriers out of the way. Only 5% of managers say that they've had such a dialogue when conducting performance reviews.
Well, then I'd even back it up and ask them how many of them have had good quality performance reviews in the last 3 years with their employees. So you're, you know, in some regard, you're already standing on thin ice with that one in terms of statistics, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. And even just relying on that one annual performance review, it's got to be more frequent than that. Smart managers and magnetic leaders are ones that are having that discussion now almost on a bi-monthly basis.
Well, Kevin, have the engagement drivers over the years, because again, this is not a new subject, you've been scanning the horizon for, you've been doing, like you said, for 30 years. It may have been called something slightly different or iterated. But which are some of these drivers that really have changed over time in terms of their effectiveness to hooking people?
Interestingly enough, when you look at the workforce in general in North America, at least, the drivers haven't changed all that much. The top three have pretty much remained the same in the last 10 years, and those three, by the way, are recognition, career development. People want to know that they have a path, and they want to know what that path is, and that their boss is in their corner vis-a-vis their career growth and their development. And then lastly, their relationship with their supervisor. Mm-hmm. And so those are the three top drivers of engagement. But when you look at the third, it's really the top two, because that person is the one that's supposed to be recognizing and thinking.
Yeah, and developing.
So
career,
exactly.
Right.
So, you know, what has changed is demographics. And so if you have a different makeup of your workforce, such as maybe the younger worker, millennials, or maybe your workforce is more traditional with boomers in it, those drivers are uniquely different. And what drives a millennial to be engaged in work is not what drives a boomer. And so that's one of the things I highlight in the book, is that for many organizations, they're still using a one-size-fits-all engagement solution when they really need to do tailoring.
You bet. So this is in particular that we cannot ignore the elements of diversity in terms of how we appeal to people. Even back on this other topic of recognition, you know, one man's recognition is not another man's recognition. I mean, even the idea of being given a plaque publicly in front of the team, some people, and we know culturally, Asian cultures in particular, would be mortified at that happening, because you don't
want
to be singled out. It's about the group. And the same way, you know, cross different age groups, like you said, you know, millennials to whatever, but even across different departments. I mean, financial people vis-a-vis engineering or marketing people, and of course we have cross-functional teams now, but we still have to give some thought to then what's the best way to provide that recognition.
Absolutely. That's one of the mistakes people make is they don't ask, how do you like to be recognized? Now, I have to be honest, I was horrified when one of my employees came to me after multiple times where I heralded her work in public staff meetings and, oh, look, she did another great job again. Everybody applause for so-and-so. And she came to me gingerly one day and she said, Kevin, I know your intent is good, but it really is embarrassing for me. And she was an introvert, and I probably should have recognized it, but I thanked her so much for letting me know, and I never publicly recognized her again.
Right, but then if you think that that's what she needs, then you'll find another person that you can overlook the fact that, no, they need a lot more public stroking, that then you overlook it, and now you look like the bad guy. So there's never one size fits all, like you said earlier.
Exactly.
So you've talked about, you kind of dispel some of the myths around this. You give some nice new definitions. Again, by the way, we're speaking with Kevin Sheridan, who's the Senior Vice President of HR Optimization with HR Solutions. His book is Building a Magnetic Culture, How to Attract, Retain Top Talent to Create an Engaged, Productive Workforce. What are some of the, we'll call it engagement trends then, that you've been tracking and that you're now really seeing hit the ground running now?
Well, I think the smart organizations are tailoring their solution. And so with the younger workforce, and those are the two newest generations, one being the millennials, which I think the youngest millennial at this point is 31 years old, they tend to really like a lot of work-life flexibility. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be confined by work hours. They are green, and boy, do they want to be working at a socially responsible employer. So those are some of the touch points that we've seen our best-in-class clients use to build engagement with that population. The newest population, which has just been dubbed, and I laughed when I first heard this, these are the young workers literally right out of school who are frantically trying to find a job to pay their student loans back. They've been dubbed the digital natives because they indeed grew up almost born with the ear pods and the technology around them, and boy, do they love technology. One other thing that is overlooked that I featured in the book, Building a Magnetic Culture, is fun. Mm-hmm. And we've learned from our clients that try to breed levity in the workplace and literally make a proactive, conscious effort to build fun into the work environment, boy, do they get engagement. They absolutely see engagement pay dividends because people love going to work there. So we dedicated a chapter in the book on that. One of the case studies in there is a brand that many North Americans can relate to, and that is the Radio Flyer Corporation. They make the little red wagon, and they also make scooters. And we have learned so much about how to build fun from them, and they're literally one of the best places to work in the world.
But you know, I have to say, I think about myself when I tell my stories of earlier in my career in particular. I was in the automobile business, and we did wild and crazy things when we were testing cars. Or we, hid a can of tuna fish in the boss's drawer who was giving us a difficult time. Open, by the way. We all have those pranks and jokes, and April Fool's Day was just a Donnybrook for things that would go haywire. And, I step into other companies over the years, and it's sort of like, oh, it's April Fool's. What's going to happen? And nothing happens. So this goes back to this whole idea of the magnetic culture and the co-ownership of engagement that, for our listeners that are employees of organizations saying, I wish we had more fun at work. Well, who's to say it has to come from the guys sitting in the front office or that might have the title or, heaven forbid, a statue in the lobby? That why can't you then take a hold of this and be that part of your contribution to the organization and your peers?
That's a great point, and I'm thinking about my own organization and some of the best ideas for fun. It came from the ground up. They didn't come from the corner office. We have in our kitchen area, which everybody frequents at least twice a day when they're not working from home, we actually have both walls to the kitchen covered with what are called personal fact sheets. And there's a woman on our marketing team named Christina Anderson that came up with this concept to put everybody's placard up there with their picture, and it says their hometown, their favorite TV show. So you're like, oh, you watch Dexter too. I love that show. And my favorite two parts of that fact sheet is, number one, the one fun fact that no one knew about
sure.
you. And, you know, I ran into one of our project managers the other day, and I came up to her. I was like, "You kissed Harry Connick Jr.? Wow, was it on the cheeks or the lips?" And we had a great laugh. And then also the other part of the fact sheet is a list of their drivers of engagement. Is it career development, or what drives their job engagement? And that really was a home run when Christina came up on it. And it keeps people, keeps it on a people level, a personal level.
You know, though, we have to be careful, too, though. There can be some mistakes or some warnings or, what would you say, some unintended consequences for all of the best intended reasons, right? What do some of your surveys, you know, caution people about?
Well, you know, it was interesting that you bring that up, because when it relates to the personal fact sheets, we wanted to put things in there that were pre-approved by the manager, so they didn't have anything in there that was inappropriate or potentially embarrassing. So there was a little bit of a screening, but it certainly was not confining, controlling thing. Where we caution organizations the most is, if your intentions are to build a magnetic culture, then you have to have follow through, and there has to be accountability.
Amen.
One of the greatest single mistakes that companies make as it relates to employee engagement surveys, when they ask employees to confidentially give feedback about their job environment, they get the feedback and they don't do anything with the results. Only a third of the employees in America that fill these surveys out believe that they result in change. And I think that is appalling. And I'm happy to say, among our clients, we begin each engagement by warning them, this is not some data research thing. This is about action, and this is about using the feedback to build a truly special work environment. And they follow through with our coaching.
Yeah, and then, in fact, I'm certain for you, although we never like to walk away from a client, but there are bad clients. And so if you're not going to get that traction, you have to really have to reflect on, is it going to allow your team to really do the kind of work that you know motivates all of you, too?
Yeah, absolutely. And some of our best clients have someone in the leadership, the top position, the CEO position, who is passionate about this whole topic of building a magnetic culture and job engagement. And they're very real. And I wish we had more of them, but they're special individuals that are carrying people in leadership positions that create wonderful outcomes for everybody.
That's
because
right.
They care about job engagement.
Well, terrific. Well, but you know, Kevin, your contribution by writing this book is really every bit a part of making that happen. And again, my guest today was Kevin Sheridan, Building a Magnetic Culture. You can learn more about the book by going to buildingamagneticculture.com. Also, get a hold of Kevin in the Chicago area. It's area code 312-863-6109. Well, I'm going to keep track of you, my friend, and watch for the next book we might want to feature, or another study that kind of makes everybody step back, take pause, and Kevin, not just capitalize on your 30 years of experience in new ways, but also all those new ideas that are swirling out there to help us learn more about leading more effectively in organizations.
Thank you so much. I really, really, really enjoyed this.
Terrific. Okay, we'll be in touch. Have a great afternoon.
All the best.
Thank you so much.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.